Hey, welcome to season two of the Speak the Unspoken podcast. It has been quite a while since we've released an episode, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And we're going to be kind of telling you a little bit about our story and what's been going on throughout that time.
This is the Speak the Unspoken podcast, where we help parishes and dioceses unlock their ministry potential. Our goal is to host the conversation for you and ministry leaders on how to reach people in a post-Christendom era. We hope you enjoy the show.
We've had a lot of changes going on in Glass Canvas, and we've done quite a bit of crazy things. I feel like the world has been pretty nuts the last 18 months. And a lot of people have pivoted, and we've done a similar pivot. But in order to understand how that pivot makes sense within who we are as Glass Canvas and what we do, it's probably helpful for us to kind of go back and fill out some of those gaps. So we're just going to be having a conversation about that today. But we're coming up on this December 1st, will be 10 years of Glass Canvas being around. And I remember in the very early days, people were saying, just before we started, I went and I asked a whole bunch of people, hey, I kind of want to do faith-filled work. And this is like 2011, end of 2011. So, and want to do faith-filled work. I don't know what you were doing at the time, but
I was, I didn't come in until about 14 months after you guys started.
Yeah. So around that time, the world was saying, oh, you got to do 80% corporate work in right. order to do 20% ministry work or passion projects, as they called it. And there was just this thing that irritated the heck out of me in that the mentality at the time, and it's still, you know, in different parts of the church are, oh, you know, that's a good website for a church.
Yeah.
And that just drove Pierre and I crazy at the time, thinking that, oh, somehow we've thought it's okay that the gospel can accept some sort of lesser medium in order to be shared, you know, as if we could have second best. And we were hearing stories all the time of like this really creative group of people that would do a website for a church or something along those lines. And then all of a sudden they'd be gone because Sony or someone, you know, Sony's a real example. Sony would phone them and say, hey, we need you now. And they say, oh, sorry, church, we're giving you a massive discount. So we got to kind of move on to the real work. And that just, that concept drove me nuts. And I remember the first Easter after we had officially started wrestling with this idea of going, oh, Jesus, is it okay? You know, I was kind of negotiating with him mm-hmm. to do 100% just work in the faith space. And as if it was like, hey, I'm negotiating with him what the responsible thing to do is, mm-hmm. like feeling like all the advice I gotten was responsible was 80-20, 80% non-faith work.
Or 60-40 or whatever.
Or 60, yeah. Well, the highest I got actually was 70-30. Somebody was like, oh, 70-30. And it was actually Fraser Field, who's a shout out to him, who you know, who mm-hmm. kind of connected us a little bit before you met. He was the first person to say, it might be possible, but you're going to have to leapfrog the local church. Mm-hmm. You can't only focus on where we are in Vancouver and, you know, Lower Mainland or even British Columbia. You're going to have to go broader. And that's actually funny enough. That's what opened my mind to go, I don't have that capacity to build relationships beyond the context of this, which is probably what opened up.
Which is where you showed up at my door.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. After talking to your father-in-law, Bob Gemmel, who's also a great guy. So, but anyways, around that time, that Easter, I was praying and I said, Jesus, okay, is it okay if all I do is faith-based work? And he said probably one of the kindest things he could have said. It was like one of those perfect moments, you know, like, who should we pay taxes to? Mm-hmm. And he says the coin or what should we do with
the perfect way to lay it out.
It's perfect way to lay it out. And for me, it was, why don't you do it until you can't pay the bills?
Right.
Which at the surface seems like, oh, that's a solid yes. But it was a yes with total freedom of not having the pressure of forced into that.
Which interestingly enough is what you said to me when you came up you know, took a ferry ride over to where I was living and outside of Vancouver. And that's the statement you said to me is like, I had this, you know, talk with God. And there's this ability to, because I think I was in the same camp. Like years before, I had sort of gone through emotion and given it up. Of trying to go, oh man, it'd be great to have an agency that only focused on faith-based work. But when you laid it out, it was like the encouragement of people coming around going, hey, we could do this until we can't do it anymore, you know?
Yeah, and he has been totally faithful in that journey, even to the point where at one point we realized, oh, like we could start, you know, chasing like corporate work, quote unquote corporate work, but we've actually tooled our whole system that it doesn't make sense anymore. Corporate work was actually less viable for us at one point than any other work. So, yeah, and we've always just wanted to, the theme throughout that is what ended up becoming our brand promise, is to unlock ministry potential. And so if we think of like what's been going on in the last 18 months, that's something that we really wanted to stay true to, is unlocking ministry potential. But over the years, we built tools, right? Like we built tools for our clients.
Out of necessity.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, there's these tools out there, but they don't quite do what we do. And there was this disconnect between a really great tool for the business world and really sort of tools built by like within faith-filled context that weren't as good as the tools built from the outside. But the outside ones felt like you were like sticking a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And the church ones felt like, oh, they'll do, but they weren't as robust and powerful. And
if I can add something, like one of the things that I found all the time is you'd end up going into the need to use the corporate tool. And it's a great tool, but because the majority of the market for that tool is not the faith-based ministry, as soon as you needed it, as soon as you changed it to make it just work for you, they would change something because 80 to 90% of their market, or usually 95% of their market, was not you. Mm-hmm. And then it wouldn't work. So you're constantly chasing, you know, the adjustment.
Yeah. Or did almost everything except 10% or whatever. And that 10% ended up being critical, and the workarounds for that 10% ended up costing a lot of administrative time and things like that. So we ended up building, really starting with a content management system where we were helping people communicate their mission and their part of the gospel more effectively. And so we started building these tools. And we would always just implement what we've built to the next client just at the cost of doing that. We weren't like reselling them as a product or whatever. And unlike what was unique in us making that call to say, hey, 100% faith-based work, is that all our clients were on the same mission and were way happier to share.
Right.
As opposed to some of the other agencies that we know, say they work for a bank or a university or something like that. They don't actually want to share the tech.
Right.
Because
that they paid to create.
Yeah. And innovate with the client.
Right.
Whereas because we're all doing kingdom building work, we get to share kingdom building work with other kingdom builders.
Right.
And there's no those conflict there. So this sort of invisible guiding force for us was like God's providence going, oh, do this.
That thread though is, I think that's the thread of this story is, we didn't set out to be where we are today, but God had this thread that we couldn't even see, but it just kept naturally progressing to the point where we are, which is what we'll get to in a moment. But it happened not just in the software side, but also in the clients that came to us that God brought into our path. And we were here to serve them. But as we look back, it's like everything we learned by building relationship with these key clients to be who we are and what we need for, you know, where he has us going in the future. What I look back and it's just like, oh my goodness, you couldn't have planned it better.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this like quite a lot over the last year and thinking through, we're almost a decade into this. Who have we kind of interacted with? And it's been, these beautiful ministries that have really thought through what it means to love people, in the evangelization, like a lot of evangelization clients, you know, we helped focus, kind of communicate their mission, St. Paul's Outreach, SPO. We worked with CCO, which was one of like the very first clients that we got. And the Sisters of Life, the CFRs, the their families of character, like all these ministries, and in serving them, what you're saying is absolutely right. Like it was almost many of them, I felt like we were learning way more about the genius that God had put in their organization and kind of getting a really robust and well-rounded understanding of all these parts of the Christian life in order to like kind of put them together. And if I look back now, it kind of feels like God had a curriculum for us that he really wanted us to learn. And because of our process where we were spending 5 days in like really intensity, diving into like who they are at the deepest sense of identity, you learn so much about like, like what the secret sauce is in each of those things.
You can't help but absorb some of that as well.
Oh,
it's, if you want to know more about that process, that's really the first season summed up is, looking at how we did these 5 day, what we called strategy sprints.
Yeah. And, to kind of keep going on the lines of, we learned so much during that process, which just felt like, oh, okay, God had a plan for what he wanted us to kind of learn. And we've been kind of shaping, like, what do we do with this kind of knowledge? And just before the pandemic, we have, well, let me go back. One really important thing to understand about who we are and how we operate is our quarterlies. And I would say that every person who works here, if you ask them, hey, what makes Glass Canvas different? They'll have a bunch of answers, but almost everyone will say, oh, it's quarterlies.
Or it's how we run that.
How we run quarterlies.
That sounds like such a businessy term, quarterly, but it's really just like at least once a quarter coming together as a team. And it's well, I'll let you go into describing how that functions, but this is interesting because it's, I don't think we've never explained this part of what we do and how we do because it's felt so internal to us.
Yeah. And what we should do, put in show notes or whatever, we should show like some of the quarterly statements that we got out. Yeah. But so what we do is we'll go and everyone on our team, not just the people on like our executive leadership team or whatever, everyone goes on our team and we spend 15 to 20 minutes and we send them all out and say, in whatever way you can, go hear from God. So people will have like phrases that come to mind or images or like scripture verses.
Whatever your experience of how you communicate with God.
Whatever your spirituality, yeah. Kind of like how God talks to you. And like it's been pretty powerful because then what we do is when we come back, we write everything that everyone heard on a whiteboard. And then we say, what is God saying to us? And it is remarkable how thematic it is every time.
I grew up a missionary kid. I've seen a lot of like, you know, been a part of different things, but still every quarterly I get excited for the fact that like, it's such an obvious way of seeing God work in multiple people and having that affirmation of what he's saying. It's blows me away. I get excited every time.
Yeah. And we don't prime people or anything along those lines. We say, hey, this is kind of what we're going to into the next season. This is our perception. But we want that quarterly statement to be a texture or a background to all our decision-making in the next 3 months as we kind of plan for that.
I explained it one time trying to explain it to a friend of mine. So all these statements that get on the board, there's a process to sort of congeal them into, you know, a core statement, a core element that we can all sort of champion. But I view that that statement as the posture we're going to take in the next quarter. And posture is like almost like a filter for you can have a number of questions, whether it's in business or practical or relationship, but the posture you take to answer that question or to define how you combat some problem or an opportunity is changes the result completely.
And it gives you confidence to kind of say, okay, in the book of James, it says, when, I'm going to badly paraphrase this, but when you hear from the Lord, have confidence to act, right? Like you have to have that confidence. And quarterly has really been that for us. And yeah. And in the story of like developing it, I can't even, you know, the weird part is I kind of remember just us doing it one day.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of said, hey guys, let's
pray together.
Let's pray together and figure out what the Lord's saying. And then in the process, we're like, we should write what we feel like something is to sort of have this Ebenezer or this reminder of what he said. And we wrote it down and we kind of lived by it and it kind of emerged that way. But two quarterlies before, so we had one quarterly that was right when the pandemic hit here, but the one just before that, 3 months before that, we were praying, and the thing that came up was open up the floodgates and wait for my hand. So this is 3 months before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It's so even before probably some of the super early reports from China would have come out.
Right.
Wasn't on anyone's roadmap. And we're like,
and I remember this one being like the first time going, I have no idea what that means. Like, I have no clue how this relates at this point in time. Like you can sort of have a reference, but this one threw me off a little bit. It felt right. It felt so right. It was lined up with everyone, like even with what God was telling me, but I didn't know how sometimes we have a statement that comes out and it's just like, I know exactly how this shifts where we're going.
Right.
This one was a little bit of like, it was literally wait, like, open up and wait.
And we're like, oh, I didn't even have preconceived ideas of what that would look like or what the open up the floodgates makes sense, but wait for my hand, like this idea that there would be like rushing water or something was going to happen, was not what I was anticipating at all.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I understand the openness to something. But I didn't understand what would happen. And then, yeah, so right before the pandemic hit, it was like the week before we did it, before Justin Trudeau said, go home, stay home. And it was embrace peace and dare with others to claim ground for my kingdom.
Right.
And it was super weird. At the time, we had kind of limped into the OSV challenge going, oh, like OSV is looking for innovation. For those of you who don't know, it's like this challenge that Our Sunday Visitor has put on. They created this, you know, division of their organization to inspire innovation within the church. And we're like, oh, that sounds great. Like we'll see what happens. Do that. And we were planning on going to the Catholic Creative Summit at the time, which would be where the final judging would have been. And we're like, we're going there anyways. It would be great to kind of enter, mingle, see what else out there. But we didn't think a lot about it. We were like, oh, there's, you know, a good prize. You know, we consider ourselves innovative or hope so.
To be clear, we had been developing things for years. And there was this idea that maybe we could take what we've developed and put it into a product. And, you know, there'd been attempts or sort of just like we played around with it with different experiences but never really owned it as our own or claimed it as our own. So this was the first time I think we really said, what would the model for this look like? And that the OSV Institute and the OSV Innovation Challenge sort of was a great urging or push to go, hey guys, take what you have and put it into something that says, this is an opportunity. This is an innovation.
Yeah. And we'd spent lots and lots of time and effort and dollars, years like building up this technology. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, this could be useful. Maybe we'll just kind of keep, you know, self-funding this thing, keep in.
And we were working on it as an agency with the Archdiocese of Vancouver at the time. So it wasn't like, hey, let's just pull these things off the shelf. It was something we were implementing with a client based on the technology we had. It was, I think it was just like, okay, what would this look like scaled to others?
Yeah. And then, the OSV challenge pivoted. like everyone was pivoting and say, hey, we're not going to be meeting in person. And that it, at that point, it still felt weird that, you know, oh, that's, you know, not a lot was going on in Vancouver at the time. So, and then they said, but in order to give you guys more value, we've partnered with the Notre Dame Idea Center to kind of run you through like a startup incubator process and do that. And we said, okay, like that sounds great. We'd love to have sort of an outside perspective. We do a lot of this for other clients, but we'd love to like go through a process because, you know, the tailor's son or the shoemaker's son problem, right? Yeah. And so we did that. And then I remember walking outside my home because obviously everyone is working from home and we were on a call with one of their mentors and it hit me and I was like, oh.
Someone who'd been in our shoes, he'd like walked through our process. He'd worked in software, but he was faithful. Like it was, I'll call him Ryan Krieger, was just this amazing support at the right time in the right place, a relationship we wouldn't have ever made otherwise, a connection we wouldn't have made.
And in a context where he was just asking us honest questions.
Yeah.
And you and I were both on the call and all of a sudden it was like, we can help more people unlock their ministry potential mm-hmm. as a product company, as opposed to an agency, mm-hmm. which we've loved being an agency, but the influence that you have as an agency is you help these really great ministries that we've always helped like do their mission better. But there was this part in us that like started stirring pretty deeply of having, be able to help more people at scale mm-hmm. in that idea. And we've always loved it. There's been clients who have phoned us and they said, hey, like we got like $10 in the bank, but you know, we really want you guys to help us. And like our hearts are right there.
Yeah.
And it would break every time that would happen. And then we said, oh, as a product company, that might even be possible.
I think that was one of the hardest parts of being an agency is that those that really had the heart and the drive to succeed, to like actually put everything into the ministry, often came with the problem that they weren't funded to be able to afford what we'd built as a team. You know, we have to pay the bills for everyone that works on our team. And that was always so hard to go, listen, we will consult you free of charge until you can get here, but we can't really dive deep in until that point. And I remember recapping sort of after that call with Ryan.
Like phoned you right back. Yeah. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, what is this? What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. And just going, this is it. Like, this is how we move. Like we have to put a line in the sand at some point here. And we got to decide and bring it back to, you know, the partners and the rest of the team. And
I started phoning like other people. I phoned Pierre, I phoned Luke, I phoned Simon, like, and I was like, hey, like this, and this, the spirit of that season was also like, hey, businesses were pivoting and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think we had like, by
there was
providence,
a momentum there was, built there.
And, but it was like, oh man, like, what does that mean? We knew that there would be a gap that mm-hmm. we were like, maybe we can just like, really hustle and fill the gap. But then the more we do, it's like, no, we're gonna need to find like partners or investors or whatever to be able to help us do that. And that's what led us to move from, this is why season two is taking so long to come out, is we had to make this jump and say, we're no longer gonna do agency work. We are gonna build products that help the church unlock its potential, yeah. focusing on diocesan product and parish product. Mm-hmm. Because we'd built something that's actually totally interconnected. And you can see more on tilmaparish.com or tilmaplatform.com, depending on what you're looking at. But yeah, that was this massive shift for us. And it was mm-hmm. just this huge leap that we had to take. And the Lord started providing like different people in our lives mm-hmm. to be able to kind of process what was going on. Like some of the mentors, some people that just randomly showed up in connections and say, hey, like I saw you kind of doing this thing, like let's chat. And those people have continued to come out. But one of the fascinating things that we're going to kind of unpack throughout the season is this idea that there is a new model in the church emerging, mm-hmm. a new ministry model. And that's what season two is going to be all about, is unpacking the philosophy behind it that mm-hmm. we're discerning. And if you're listening and you've got it this far, you know, thank you. And it's great. We want to have a dialogue. Like, we want to discern together what the principles of that new model are. And that's what season two is going to be about.
So it's not just going to be us and our team this season. It's going to be an invitation to others to have and sort of pick, start to understand or hone this new ministry model that seems to be developing within not just ourselves, but others. That there's like a calling towards this. And one thing I want to point out is, like, this isn't something that's like a snap of the fingers and it was just there. The reality is when you have these moments like we've had in the last 18 months, and when you have these struggles that come before you, you start to investigate, how did you get here and what is the most important? And I think we've always had this philosophy built in, baked into how we do things. And that's come out through our values and different things like that. And a lot through the quarterly and different things. But there's this ministry model that we sort of lived by, but never put the principles in place of saying, what are the principles of this ministry model? What are the anchors of these, why we do what we do and how we do what we do?
And I also think that, why is that relevant right now? Because COVID has jumped us forward into the future. Whatever trend the church was on, like, mm-hmm. which sadly there's these Pew and Gallup polls that were down, that were down 20% of church membership, or less than 50% of people are church affiliated in the US. That COVID has probably jumped us forward. We just don't know how much. So as like kind of things return, we'll know in a year or so, I think. But something amazing is happening, and that's what we're going to try and pack with people this season. Yeah. So looking forward to having that conversation.
Me too.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts, or you can find out more at glasscanvas.io. We're so grateful that you could be with us today, and we're looking forward to catching you on the next episode.